Okay. One thing I was going to ask about was the atmosphere within the programme, if that had changed during the last year. I was thinking that late 82, early 83, there were all sorts of problems that were being talked about. Whether you'd noticed a significant difference in, say, just general morale of people on the programme in that time.
Yeah, I've seen both improvements and degradations, I think, depending on where you look. I've seen at Wisconsin, Bless at least, I think, has gotten a little more cheerful about the program over the last year since Carr and Bogus came in. Things at Goddard have improved a lot, and that happened really about when, about December of '82 or something like that. It was shortly after I got here, before I'd had much interaction with Goddard. So all the relations, problems with relations with Goddard are more or less hearsay from my point of view. You know, I just heard people complain about him a lot, but I didn't experience it firsthand. And everybody seems to agree that things are much better at Goddard than they were a year and a half ago. At the Institute, I see kind of the opposite thing. From a year ago, I think the atmosphere is worse than it was now. People are a little bit depressed, and that's probably just an effect of a year or two ago, most of the people had just come in and they were all enthusiastic, you know,
Yes.
and now they've had a year of seeing problems and seeing things that didn't always go the way that, you know, you look at something and you think, all right, what is the solution to this? And you come to what you think is the obvious and only reasonably correct answer to it. And you present it to people and they say, no, we aren't going to do that, you know, and your idea just gets tossed out. And when people have seen that happen over and over, they get to be pretty pessimistic about, sort of cynical about the way things are going. So I've seen that's coming in the Institute. I guess you know, I heard people talk about it when I came here, when I first got here. They said that there's a period of about a year when you don't really believe that sometimes there's nothing you can do, you know, that things are just out of your control. And then you begin to realize that, and then there's a period of disillusionment, and then after that there's a period where you're sort of back to normal again. And right now I think a lot of people at the Institute are going through this period of disillusionment.
Right, I did an interview with Sam Keller in NASA headquarters, and he had a chart saying six phases of a project, and the first one was wild enthusiasm, the second one was disillusionment, and the third one, I think, the guilty search for the innocent. It goes on like this down to about number six, which says medals awarded to those who didn't participate. So I don't know if that's
Yeah,
it.
that's about it.
Yeah, I think we might have that in the frontispiece of our book on the Space Telescope. I don't know if that'd be an accurate claim.
It was interesting at VAP. VAP just ended a week, or maybe it's 2 weeks ago now. And I was down there the day that they officially ended it, and they had in the computer room this huge sign up, you know, "Welcome to the end of VAP," with all these little cartoons and people that had, things that people had drawn on it. And the sign had sort of a spirit of celebration about it, but none of the people around did. And there were, you know, it was kind of a depressing thing. One of the computers had been taken away because the HRS was going to instantly move off to Ball, and things were kind of starting to get disassembled there. And I think at Goddard, people were feeling like, well, you know, the Goddard part of the instrument development is almost over now, you know, and it's off in somebody else's hands. So it was, you know, it was not a, it was a kind of a melancholy feeling among the people, you know. And the other thing that was funny about it is they were, in some ways, they were fooling themselves by saying, ah, VAP is over, VAP is successful, you know. There was a lot of pressure on everybody to declare this test was a big success. And both Jeff Percival and Don Finnegan, the two HSP people who had to sign the form saying this is a success, I guess, attached footnotes saying, you know, well, we have severe reservations about signing this. And Jeff said that, you know, he had a big telecon where his arm was twisted, he was commanded to sign the form by Blessed Evan Richards. Gave the date of the telecon there in the footnote, you know. So it was, it was a very peculiarly mixed emotional feeling, where people were happy that it was over, but they were unhappy that it was over, but they were happy that it was success, but they were just sort of kidding themselves that it was really a success, you know. It was a complicated situation. I don't know. I haven't seen what things look like at Lockheed yet. Everybody seems to be afraid that Lockheed's really going to be a disaster. That the testing, the people there are even less prepared for the testing of the instruments than the people at VAP were. At least that's a big concern of Bless's. So it's, I don't know. I mean, I can't give a simple answer to whether the mood has improved right. or not. It's improved some places. It's gotten worse other places.
Is the HSP itself going to have much reworking?
No, it's...
Is it going to go back to Madison before going out?
No, it's staying. Any rework that, if they decide to do any, and right now I think there aren't any plans to do any significant hardware changes, will be done at Goddard. It's going to stay at Goddard, and they've got a lot of testing planned. There's another... What they had to do, they had this big problem with the low voltage power supply. That was their biggest hardware problem for a long
time. Is that the Rockwell supply?
The Rockwell one, yep. That's right. PCBS. And they've put in one of the new design supplies. And it was one, I don't know if I can get this all right, and you probably got the better story from Bless if you talk to him. They put in one that was tested at the box level. So after everything was fully assembled, it was tested rigorously. But it was not tested at the board level. Individual parts were not, because they wanted to get finished as soon as possible. Then they're building serial number 2, which is supposed to be tested at the board level and then assembled, and then it will be tested at the box level. Then they'll switch it out, and that'll be the flight unit. Now, I don't know if they've changed their minds about that. They've had a problem with getting some parts for the second unit, where they have some parts which the Madison people think are perfectly acceptable, and which some quality assurance person at Goddard says are not acceptable. They don't meet some specs which the parts were supposed to meet. And the Madison people say, these are specs which are completely unimportant to us. The Goddard person says, these are the specs that are on the page, you know. So they're battling about that, and they don't have the parts to construct the second unit. So I don't know if they've changed their mind and decided that the one that's in is going to be the flight unit or not. So that's the only hardware thing that's going on. And there are some tests they're going to do that have to do with just retesting the HSP now that they've got this new piece of hardware in. They also made some changes in the high voltage supply in the earlier part of this year. And so there will be another pretty complete thermal vacuum test in May, I think, or is it? Maybe it's in April. I forget exactly what the schedule is, but other than that, there's not really any hardware work to be done. What they're going to be doing is just testing, calibrating the electronics, and that sort of thing. And it's actually, it's going to be a good time for the instrument, I think, if somebody will at least put a little bit of thought into planning what they're going to do. This is a great opportunity. It's like 3 months when they can do anything they want,
yes.
short of damaging the instrument, you know. And so this is a real chance for them to try out a lot of things that the other instruments, that they just don't have this kind of leisure time that they can just play around with the instrument. Everybody else has these very tight schedules between now and A and B, where they don't have any time to play around with it.
I guess that... That kind of flexibility isn't going to be available after then. That's going to be the loss.
Yeah, it looks very unlikely. Like there's a period of 6 weeks at Lockheed before A and V starts. I think that's this pre-A and V period. And that's the time, that's all the time that they have to get all the instruments connected together to kind of spread out on the floor to connect up the... DF224 or whatever. There's some new piece of hardware that's going to be connected up to run a bunch of tests like VAP, essentially to redo the entire VAP test.
Yes.
And it's probably, I mean, that's probably not going to be enough time, so it's almost certain that they aren't going to have a little bit of time at the end before AMD is scheduled to start to try some new things. So I think that this is probably what will happen is, you know, something will happen to use up all the spare HSP time. You know, something will break, something disastrous will happen, and they won't have any either. But if that doesn't happen, then this is a pretty unique situation as far as space telescopes seen. Where somebody's actually sitting around, they have time to think about what it is they're doing and to make some decisions right then about what's the best way to proceed.
Will there still be guarded oversight of things, even though the instrument is at Lockheed, or is in effect the instrument handed over to Lockheed?
Hmm.
I just wonder if you're still going to be liaising closely with, or the HSP team anyway, is going to be liaising closely with Goddard during that period.
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I don't know. Goddard has this guy called the ITE, the Instrument Test Engineer. They have one for each instrument.
Is that Wayne Sowers for?
Well, no, it's... What is it? No. Wayne Sowers is something else, I think.
Ah, right.
The Don Finnegan. I think that's right. I think Don Finnegan is the ITE. I'm pretty sure that's what he's called. He is a contractor from OAO, and I think that he's not going to Lockheed. I'm not absolutely certain of that, but I think that he's not. Now, I would have thought that if Goddard was really going to try to keep much of a hand in, that he would be the logical person for them to keep around, at least if they're going to have any technical idea what's going on, because he's the only person connected with Goddard who has been really keeping close tabs on technically what's going on with the instrument. Wayne Sowers is... I'm a little bit unsure about what it is he does, because I've had very little interaction with him, but I know that he's some kind of Goddard HSP person, and so maybe he's the one who will stick around and who will keep track of it. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know what the formal relationship of Goddard with the instrument called the testing is between now and then. Do you know if, I don't know even who's supposed to be managing AMV. I don't know if it's Goddard or if it's Marshall.
That I'm unsure about, because I think Goddard are going to be setting up a small office at Lockheed.
Mm-hmm.
But whether it will be Goddard doing the managing or Marshall, that I'm not clear about. I think that might even be something that's still being discussed.
Oh, good.
I'm not up. Don't, I would like to be quoted on that.
Oh, right.
that I don't know about,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, I don't know either. I haven't thought about it too much, I guess.
Right. I wonder if there's anything that you think I've missed in the talk, anything that you think has been important for what you've been doing at the Institute, or important areas you think I've ignored in the kind of questions I've been asking.
I don't know. I mean, the one thing that we haven't talked about is the internal workings of the Institute, in a way. There were a lot of problems in the instrument support branch early on in the Institute. Now, a lot of them stem from the fact that we didn't have a branch chief to begin with. Don Hall was the acting instrument support branch chief.
This would have been the case when, early 83, I guess, and so this is before Duccio.
That's
comes
right.
In.
Yeah. And what happened was, this is after Brown was made the deputy branch chief.
Oh, so for a time you didn't even have a deputy?
No, we didn't. And so we were having erratic meetings. And things were going along pretty well. I mean, there weren't that many problems. And people were pretty happy. And then there was a staff meeting where Bob Brown got up and said that there was this great morale problem in the ISB, because we didn't have a branch chief who was doing anything. We didn't know what was going on in the Institute. There was nobody to take our side and so on. And Holland said at the time that this was a ploy on Bob's part to take over the branch. And shortly thereafter, Bob started out, he was going to be appointed acting deputy director, or acting director, acting chief in Don's place. But there was some behind the scenes wheels turning, which I wasn't ever sure what really went on. And then he got appointed deputy branch chief, and Don retained the title of acting branch chief. And at that point, Bob made all these, what to him I'm sure seemed heroic efforts to organize the branch. The problem with the instrument support branch has been that we don't have a lot of things that we have to deliver. You know, you look in the contract about what it says, it just says all these vague things about what we're supposed to be doing. You look at what the other branches have to do, and they have this document has to be delivered on this date, this document has to be delivered on that date, you know, and there are specific milestones they have. We don't have any milestones. And Bob was trying to organize this as if we did have milestones. You know, he was trying to set up a very strict, formal way for the branch to operate. Since we didn't have any formal responsibilities, that wasn't working very well. And there was a lot of dissatisfaction with Bob's way of working. There was this feeling that Bob never told you what was going on up at the higher levels, that he never carried any of our ideas up, and that what he tended to do was go into the meetings with Ricardo and all the other big chiefs, and they'd sit around, and Ricardo would say, well, here's this new thing that's come up, you know, somebody needs to think about this problem and work on it. And Bob would leap up and say, the ISB will do it, you know. It's the ISB to the rescue. And he would come back to us and say, well, here's this job to be done, you know, and the ISBs are obviously the ones that have got to do it. And he was just pulling in tasks from all over the place, you know, and sort of sweeping them up, and then he'd come and dump them on us.
Right.
And it cost a lot of hard feelings. And
okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say that for a while, we decided they were having these senior staff meetings, which later were changed and named as senior management meetings, where all the big shots got together and made the decisions that affected everybody's lives. So somebody came up with the idea that we ought to have somebody just from the normal scientific staff sitting in on those meetings, just as a representative, and so they could convey back to the rest of the staff what was going on. And I was that person for a while. And I got to see Bob in action, and a lot of times it really seemed like Bob's interests were not necessarily the interests of the ISB in these meetings. They were Bob's interests, you know, that he was not trying to represent us, that he was more inclined to accuse us of doing this or doing that, you know. He wasn't trying to defend us against all the attacks from the outside, but to encourage them. So people were real unhappy about the way things were working. And there were all these... Oh, at one point there was this great memo that came out that Holland and I and John Hessel and a couple of other, Ralph Bowen, I think, a bunch of people all signed it about reorganizing the ISB along the lines of an academic department where we'd have a chairman, the chairmanship would rotate, no decisions would be made without the entire ISB voting on it and all this sort of stuff, you know. And we went into Don and Ricardo had this big confrontational meeting with them, and Ricardo attacked like a fiend. You know, it was something to see. I'd heard that this was the way Ricardo often responded in these situations. He started out with these personal attacks on people, you know, and was saying this was all ridiculous. And there was some great statement. I don't think I can remember it anyway. At the end of the meeting, then he was saying, well, this sounds like a pretty good idea, you know. He's at the end of the meeting, he's saying things are okay, and so you go away with this warm feeling that everything is okay, and that Ricardo's understood your point of view, and then nothing ever happens. And that's sort of what happened there. Nothing really ever happened. But eventually Duccio came, and Duccio runs a pretty tight ship, but he's a better manager than Bob was, I think. And he's also better at standing up for the ISB with the rest of the institute. So I've seen there's still a feeling among the ISB that we don't get no respect. Nobody appreciates the ISB. Nobody knows what it is we're doing here. And people, trying to remember what it was, Walter Jaffe said something about the ISB being this big bunch of do-nothing prima donnas, which is really untrue. The people in the ISB work very hard, but because they aren't turning out documents or something, or they aren't producing lines of code, there's this feeling that they aren't doing anything. Whereas the people in the ISB feel like they have the most important jobs in the institute, even though nobody may recognize it till after the launch when they see what it is they've been doing. That's the way the internal things have gone, and that's still going on. There's an ongoing effort to try to define what it is the ISB is going to be spending its time on over the next few years, to list all the tasks. And the way they usually work is it's something somebody else's milestone. You have all the SDS milestones, the OPD, and the IDT milestones, things that are going on. And almost none of them, for none of them does the ISB have in the past formal responsibility. But for all of them, we have practical responsibility. Like if the GO branch is supposed to produce some user's manuals for the instruments, and they aren't going to write those manuals. They're going to come to us and have us write them. And so the question is, will it be a GO branch responsibility, in which case they'll get the credit for bringing them in on time, or will it be an ISB responsibility, in which case we'll do the same amount of work, but we'll get the credit for it. So that's been the biggest problem with being a member of the ISB at the Institute, is the fact that it's such a tenuous thing, and people view it with suspicion from the outside. From the inside, there's been all this strife. It's been a very different situation from any that I've been involved in before, I think, with a lot of politics.
Do you see very much of Ricardo in a management role, or is that very much through Duccio?
It's almost exclusively through Duccio. The way some people see Ricardo more, it's again probably because I'm just not the type of person who's inclined to go and knock on Ricardo's door and sit down in his office and tell him what my complaints are, if I have any. So that almost the only time I see Ricardo, except just passing him in the hall, is at scientific staff meetings, which Holland organizes. Holland always gets Ricardo, if he's around, to come and give a report on what's going on. And otherwise, Duccio is, lately he's been doing a good job. At the last scientific staff meeting, I think, or the one before last, there were some complaints about communications within the institute, feeling that we were always the last to find out what was going on. And Ricardo said that it was the responsibility of the branch chief to tell the people in the branch what's going on at these senior staff meetings and so on. And Duccio admitted that he hadn't been doing that, and since then he has. He has a little section in the beginning where he tells us what's going on in the outside of the institute, and before we go on and talk about internal things. So lately I feel pretty happy with the way things are going right now. But I certainly don't see much of Ricardo.
Do you see much of Adrian Timothy in terms of program management?
Too much. Adrian, my experience is Adrian can really be a pretty obnoxious character. She really can get on your nerves, because what tends to happen, we were having a discussion about writing computer programs to simulate the scientific instruments, not to simulate the operations of them, but just the way they respond to light, so scientific models of the instruments. And it's something that you really need to do a lot of different things. And we started this discussion, and Adrian was there, and before we could even have any reasonable discussion about what it was we would like to have, Adrian was stepping in saying, "Now wait a minute, there's not any money in the contract for doing this. You can't do this. There are no resources allocated for creating models of the instruments. So you can't do this." And it's, I mean, that's her job, is to keep track of what is their money yes. for, and to tell us when we have to write at some new proposal to get more money. But it's not her job to step in and tell us what's important and what's not. And very much too often she does step in before it's appropriate for her to say, this is proper in the contract and this is not proper in the contract. And it really stifles the discussion. So, you know, it's conceivable that sometimes we'll decide on our own that this is something that's not necessary to do because somebody else is doing it. But before that even happens, a lot of the time, Adrian pops in there. And Adrian's kind of funny. Personally, she seems to have a threshold that she has to get over. She comes to all the ISB meetings. I'm not sure why. She comes to scientific staff meetings and stuff, too. And usually at the ISB meetings, she'll sit there quietly and occasionally contribute something, and it's okay. But if she says more than a couple of sentences on some topic, then it's like in some place in her mind she stepped over a threshold, and at that point then she feels free to interrupt the discussion at any point for the rest of the meeting. I've found that once Adrian has interrupted the meeting once, then the rest of the meeting often you can't, none of the discussions get anywhere because it's always Adrian stepping in to explain what the contract says on this point or that point, you know, and you can't get any discussion of the technical issues, which is what people are usually interested in. I've had much more interaction with Adrian than I have with Ricardo.
She seems very much as the day-to-day manager.
I think that's right.
Is that a correct perception?
That's my perception. That's the secondhand John Hessel's perception is that Adrian is Ricardo's right-hand man, as it were, that she is the second most important person in the Institute. She's the one he listens to the most, and I think there's a lot of truth in that from seeing the way they interact at the senior management meetings. She seems to be the one that he relies on the most. I don't know how it came to be that way. I don't know. I would hesitate to say whether that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. My inclination would be to think that it's a bad thing, but it might not be. I don't really know enough about how these things work to know that.
Were there any other areas you think I missed out?
It's pretty complete, I think.
Right. As I mentioned before, we will produce a transcript which we then hand back. So maybe if there's anything you think I missed out through ignorance or whatever, at that point, if you could point that out, then I'd be grateful.
Yeah, if I think of anything, I'll make a note to myself, try to remember when the transcript comes around.
Great. Okay, well, thanks very much. That's really been a big help.
Okay.